No Need for Paperwork, written by Cassandra.
Working as a motorway patrolwoman in Portsmouth, England, I'm frequently confronted with situations that are both bizarre and unnerving. However, the incident that occurred on the 25th of November last year is by far the most unusual of them all. During a routine speed camera setup in the city around 6:30 p.m., at which time it was completely dark, our speed trap picked up random tracings of non-existent objects hurtling past at 30 to 40 miles per hour. The devices are not actually known to malfunction, so we trained the camera on the road surface to see what we picked up. Sitting in the back of a patrol van, we were shocked to discover what the camera was picking up. Running up and down the street approximately 40 feet away from the vehicle, only barely visible through the night vision filter, was what can only be described as human figures. They were of average height, had a silvery hue. They were sprinting up and down the central divider repeatedly. They're very fast. I admit I did not exit the vehicle to investigate, but apparently I didn't have to. Only about 10 feet away at the side of the road, one of these silvery entities just appeared on the screen. Female, approximately 6 foot, standing motionless, facing away from the van. She was dressed in scantily clad clothing, not unlike that a young woman on an evening out may wear. I was extremely freaked out, especially considering that leaning out of the window, there was absolutely no evidence of anyone standing that close to the vehicle. As soon as the vehicle finally drove past, all visible evidence of the entities had vanished. Nothing occurred from that time till the end of my duty at 9 p.m. When I played back the footage from the camera, the silvery objects and the woman are not on the tape. Obviously, I did not report the incident.
All right, welcome to the True Scary Stories with Edie podcast. This is the podcast where two stand-up comedians read scary stories submitted to us by our fans, the Uglies. Hey, guys. And we also find some really creepy stories on Reddit for you guys. If you want to submit your scary story to us, you can do it on the Facebook group, which is at facebook.com/truescarystorieswithedie. And on the Instagram, same thing, and on our website, which is also at True Scary Stories with Edie. This is a podcast that has commentary after every spooky tale. And so if you're not into that, you should check out our other podcast, which comes out on Sundays, called Just the Terror. You can find it right here where you're listening to True Scary Stories with Edie.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. That was a professional one.
Yeah, you did good.
That was my professional
one. You've been resting for a week, so you prepared.
We are back. Yes, we're back and better than ever. All right, so let's get into this story. This is, seems clear-cut aliens to me, right?
I don't know. I mean, you know, she obviously said that the person was, she could tell that it was female, 6 foot, dressed in scantily clad clothing.
Oh, like an Amazon.
Yeah, yes, it was an Amazon woman. It was Wonder Woman fighting the Flash. So I don't know. Okay, so she looked out the van and there was nothing there, but they could see it on the screen. Really what goes through my head is that, you know, we've talked about different versions of our world, worlds or whatever, alternate realities. What if she just saw a glimpse of a different reality of a girl having a night out and it just happened so quick, you know, that it looked like they were running, but in that alternate reality, it was like a girl just, you know, strolling the street for a moment. So that's what I think, that maybe it was something like that.
All right. I'm going to go with aliens because okay. There are aliens that have been described as this, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah, there are aliens that have been
described. Silvery objects? I guess so.
Yes, definitely, yeah. Especially with the height and all of that. Now, the scantily clad, I can't. Maybe they were here, you know, going to a club or something.
Yeah.
Maybe they traveled across the galaxy to go to Jones, the new club in New York or something. I don't know. But they were here, and then maybe they got here, and they were like, oh, they wear clothes. I'm like, oh, get something.
Yeah,
oh,
get something from.
Yeah, and then they're so big that they're like, ooh, well, I'm wearing this tent. Is it good? And they're like, ooh, kind of looks hoochie.
Well, you know, Forever 21 would sell a lot of, like, silvery outfits, you know? So,
right.
I don't know. Maybe a different galaxy where Forever 21 is the thing.
Okay. I like it. Okay, well, you know.
It's the Forever 21 galaxy that she's from. Mm-hmm. We created fast fashion because we're fast.
Or maybe it was like, we go to Forever Nebutron.
Oh, there you go.
Which is our version of Forever 21.
Yes.
What is it? It's like Abercrombie.
And Abercrombie and Glork.
Wait, what?
Abercrombie and Glork.
Everything's just, one of the words has just changed. H and, what? H and,
what is that?
H and M.
Oh, H&M. I thought you said ancient.
No, H&M. Or we go to old Nyarmont Mall.
Please meet me at the Quack Quack Depot.
Okay, go.
I need to pick up a power sander.
And then there'll be, Home Depot. Because it's like, Office Depot? Home Depot? Pet Depot? Which depot?
Glork Depot.
Glork Depot.
But what I just said.
I know, power sander. I got which one it was.
All right. All right, so let's get on to today's.
I like how they have human tools. Power sander. Anyways, all right.
That's why they came here.
Yeah, okay.
It was for the human tools.
They needed our tools. Okay.
Yeah, they needed the human tools.
Okay, they could cross galaxies.
Right.
With
their, maybe they're doing a presentation about early power tools and stuff.
We're big fans of flipping houses.
We love your flipping houses TV.
We do it.
We've always wanted to get one of those power tools you guys are always using. Those sticky things you put on the floor and it makes it look like you have a different floor.
Yeah, sticky floor, different.
We don't have floors.
I don't know.
This has gone on a really long time. All right, today's topic. We do have to talk about aliens and all the new stuff that's been on. That's been admitted by the government surrounding aliens.
What is it?
We'll get into it. But you just reminded me of that story. But today's topic, just like aliens, unsolved terror.
Yes, these stories are unsolved terrors.
Oh, wait.
We don't know why.
Wait, but are they solved or not?
Well, there's one that's solved.
Oh, okay.
But the majority of them are unsolved.
Good. All right, good. Let's get into it. So, let's just start.
Oh, okay.
We don't need to stop the thing and do the little dun 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 dun.
Okay, all right.
We don't need to do that.
Okay. I mean, I take that moment to breathe. But let's do it.
No, we're going to do it. Okay, hold on. All right. And we have to give, Nick his little times to rest because he's a very important part of this podcast.
Yes.
He's the heart and the soul.
Yes.
So we just reviewed the new information that has been released from the Pentagon confirming that they do have some videos that they can't explain. They released some videos of UFOs, and a lot of people thought they were not from the Pentagon, they were fake, but then the Pentagon came out and confirmed, like, hey, these are, are our videos.
Authentic.
And they also said it was not the most compelling evidence they even have that...
That stuff? We have even better stuff.
Yeah, we have way more compelling evidence than that. So basically just saying that the Pentagon is kind of admitting that there are aliens, basically. And they're doing it in a really soft way at a really frantic time. So no one's really even like... Everyone's just accepting everything right now because of how crazy everything has been.
Yeah.
So it's just like, aliens? Yeah, I guess we all knew that was true. It does seem like they're kind of letting out all the information now. And if you want to, you can look up on YouTube the videos that the Pentagon has released. There's really, from looking at it, there's nothing that it could be besides an alien.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have technology like that. A lot of the videos were captured by military. Most were from the Navy. And so that, out at sea, like we've talked about so many times on this podcast where I've said that the aliens come, they have like a base underwater or something like that. Because it seems like with the world being mostly water, I guess that would make sense. But,
And it's, so the Pentagon has had this UFO unit in the naval intelligence.
Oh, so that's why.
So maybe they know more about it being in the sea since they're letting the Navy.
Right. And which is what I always say is that they're in the sea. They have either a base or they've been in the... They live on Earth and they live in the sea. Under the sea. That's where they live. Under the sea.
they love that song.
And they're like, why have you been living here, this whole time? Why haven't you said anything? And they'll say, because out on the shore, they work all day. Out in the sun, they slave away. And then we're like,
in
what?
In the ocean. Where we are aliens.
Where have you been this whole time? Under the sea. Okay.
Yeah.
And then when we were watching the clips, a woman was being annoying. And then I was like, that's kind of like what people must think I sound like.
Yeah.
All right. Let's keep going. All right.
Well, hold on. Do you think mermaids are aliens?
Mm. there might be some kind of creature-y alien thing that resembles a mermaid. I don't think it's like what we think of mermaids as, like a beautiful girl with that's a half of a fish.
Yeah.
It's got to be like more fish than person.
Oh.
But maybe there is like a brand of alien that lives in the ocean as like a fishy alien.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I live on a different planet and it's all water. But here, you know, now I live here to help the humans and I just, you know, live in the ocean. Because yep. I'm a water thing.
And then octopuses are their pets.
I think it was like octopus like came in a comet or something. Like the DNA like came from a comet or something like that. Because their DNA is not like, they can't trace octopus DNA to any other thing. Like any other creatures or anything. So they think that they must have just like came out of nowhere.
I saw a video recently of an octopus that a diver was tracking. And its way of you know, because some octopuses camouflage or turn into things.
They just, all do that.
This one doesn't. It can't, okay. It can't camouflage. So it just flat out just
says something.
Sinks into the sand. It like blows. Oh. It sits on sand, blows all of it out, and just goes underneath the sand.
Okay. Kind of like when you watch a horror movie and you like think your blanket will protect you.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, as long as I'm sweating and dying of heat underneath this blanket,
I'll be fine.
Then the monsters won't get me. Okay, good. Well, yeah, octopus are insanely smart. No one knows where they came from. We've gone over it. Let's keep going.
Okay.
The dungeon at the end.
We did the ghost tour at Port Arthur. It was the final one at 9 p.m., and it was a trek. There's a whole lot of sites across the area. A derelict church, old-timey houses, an underground sort of makeshift morgue where there was rumors of witchcraft back in the day. And the worst, freakiest place was what I can only call the dungeon. It was above ground, yes, but it was the most intensive security complex on the site. We went around all these. Since I'm a pretty fairly overweight guy, I was freaking out because I kept falling behind in nearly pitch darkness. My wife and I were pretty unsettled by the end. But then the final place was the dungeon. This group of about 60 ghost tourists were at the end of the south wing listening to the guide. I was buggered, so I was a little behind the rest, sitting on a step. I kept feeling like someone was standing right behind me. It got to the point where instead of looking at the guide and listening, I was looking the other way, staring into the darkness, listening. It was a struggle between my fear and laziness, so I just sat where I was for a while. Then all of a sudden, all the three or four doors going in and out of the dungeon started opening and shutting, slamming so hard, everyone started screaming. I kept sitting because my laziness knows no bounds, but I screamed the loudest. The guide said it's probably a good idea to leave, so we did. Some of the guests stayed at the hotel on the other side of the site. They were so freaked out that they asked the guide if they could be guided back. He was like, yeah, nah, because then he would have to have walked back by himself.
All right, Nick, I never let you go first, so why don't you go first and tell us what you think of this one?
I mean, I've never heard of Port Arthur anything, so it's a haunted place, I guess, and they got the full experience. They completely got the bejesus scared out of them. You know what? There was that video on YouTube or whatever of these people that were kind of like in a jail cell area and all the jail cell doors started opening and closing like crazy. I wonder if it's the same thing. It's got a 4 on TripAdvisor, a star rating. So
what?
Yeah, it's got a Port Arthur ghost tours. You need to know, TripAdvisor.
There was a ghost that scared us a lot, but other than that,
it was good.
They had really good like Italian sodas and stuff.
Yeah, I liked it.
I mean, even if you don't like ghosts, I mean, I would still go. They have free mimosa breakfast. I mean,
yeah. So it's a 90-minute lantern lit ghost tour. Whoa, that's kind of scary.
Yeah, that is scary. Imagine the Yelp reviews. We should try to look at the Yelp reviews on this thing later. We weren't even that scared. The ghost we saw was like not even scary.
He was more nice.
It might have been a guy in like white makeup. We're not sure, but it was pretty lame. And the ghost was really rude.
Yeah, so I guess it was a kind of like a jail thing, because more than 1,000 people died at Port Arthur during its 47-year history as a penal settlement. And some people say
penal
that the
souls
of the departed have never left. So many people were baffled. It's alarmed convicts, free settlers, soldiers, and visitors, which you can be for 30 euro. I don't know. So
30 euro.
$30.
Okay, so, you know, you went to the place. You wanted to get spooked. You got spooked. Got your money's worth.
It was $30. I took a guess. $30 sounds like a good tour price.
Yeah, that child 15. Who's taking their child? Imagine taking your child to a haunted jail.
Yeah.
A haunted jail where people died.
But people do that. People take their children to horror movies and all kinds of things all the time.
A horror movie is not the same as taking a kid to a place where actual ghosts are.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
And you believe that there are real ghosts there. That's why you're going.
Yeah, you're right. You are right.
It's very strange. You want your kid to see something that they may never be able to forget.
Oh, man.
Isn't that a lot for...
Well, people take kids on Greyhound buses all the time, so...
Yeah. Okay. All right, we'll leave it on that. Inhuman force of nature.
On the first night of February 1959, 9 ski hikers died mysteriously in the mountains of what is now Russia. The night of the incident, the group had set up camp on a slope, enjoyed dinner, and prepared for sleep. But something went catastrophically wrong because the group never returned. On February 26, searchers found the hikers' abandoned tent, which had been ripped open from the inside. Surrounding the area were footprints left by the group, some wearing socks, some wearing a single shoe, some barefoot, all of which continued to the edge of a nearby wood. That's where the first two bodies were found, shoeless and wearing only underwear. The scene bore marks of death by hypothermia, but as medical examiners inventoried the bodies, as well as the other 7 that were discovered over the months that followed, hypothermia no longer made sense. In fact, the evidence made no sense at all. One body had evidence of a blunt force trauma consistent with a brutal assault. Another had third-degree burns. One had been vomiting blood. One was missing a tongue, and some of their clothing was found to be radioactive. Theories floated included KGB interference, drug overdose, UFO, gravity anomalies, and the Russian version of the Yeti. Recently, a documentary filmmaker presented a theory involving a terrifying but real phenomenon called infrasound, in which the wind interacts with the topography to create a barely audible hum that can nevertheless induce powerful feelings of nausea, panic, dread, chills, nervousness, raised heartbeat rate, and breathing difficulties. The only consensus remains that whatever happened involved an overwhelming and possibly inhuman force.
All right, so where did this happen again?
In what is now known as Russia.
Oh, okay. So this was a very long time ago.
On the first night of February 19... I don't know why they say February 1st, 1959.
Yeah. They were trying to be really spooky. Yes. On the first night of February.
On the first night.
Yeah. Okay. So this isn't that famous case of those hikers who went missing and, like, they found them and they were, like their blood had been drained and stuff like that.
Oh, no, I guess not.
Like, some crazy, like, stuff had happened to those people.
I didn't even know this was a famous case.
Oh, yeah, but it's recent.
Oh, okay.
There was, like, yeah, it was more recent. But this is a different thing.
It's a different thing.
But it sounds kind of similar.
Yes.
Kind of similar thing. And then also there is that town in Mexico that has all those problems. Like, it has, like, a lot of spiritual and paranormal issues. And they think it's because of the hum of the power lines give off that hum that you were talking about.
Oh, the infrasound.
Yeah, that drives people crazy.
Yeah,
okay. They were thinking that was it. I'll have to look up what it is, but there you go. There's those two kind of things kind of relate. To me, this seems like abduction. I don't mean to just keep talking about aliens because of the Pentagon stuff, but the popular story about the hikers who went missing that I'll look up for you guys, and then this one also kind of give me abduction, but like alien teenagers abducted them, like, you
okay.
know, like, oh yeah, let's just go mess with some people and, you know, do something really freaky.
Yeah.
It doesn't strike me as like adult research, you know. It kind of just gives me very immature alien vibes.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Well, you know, this is the first time I've heard of like infrasound, but it's not the first time that I've heard of like sound, you know, obviously sound waves being that they could be used to hurt or something like that. So what I'm thinking is that these people were hiking. They parked in the wrong place, right? And this sound just drove them crazy to where they did this to each other, trying to figure it out, you know, or just going nuts. Like the blunt force trauma was probably one of the other ones that was like, it made me crazy to the point where I wanted to beat one of my friends, the other one, you know, missing a tongue and things like that. The radioactive clothing, I mean, that's another part of it.
I think that was something that had happened with his other story, too, was that there was, like, radioactive, radioactive, like, signal all over the place.
Yeah.
And that's, like, another reason why I thought it was, like, an alien thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, well, you know, I would say, yeah, I could see this if it really came to evidence that aliens did it, but...
We haven't considered this. What about, like, government experiments?
Yes, that's also the other thing.
Because, you know, the government does, like, for weapons and stuff like that, they do have, like, these kind of technologies, and they need somebody to test it out on.
Yeah.
And it's got to be somebody who's unsuspecting.
Yeah.
So they can get the actual data of what would happen.
Yeah.
And a lot of these, you know, secret things that our government has, weapons, things like that, that they spend billions of dollars developing.
So all governments have. Secret.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That they spend so much on defense stuff. I mean, it's not. I mean, honestly, that's probably what it was. It's probably government, like new weapons that they're trying to develop, and they're like, okay, well, these people will go missing, and no one will ask any questions.
Well, or they just didn't know, because it says what is now known as Russia. So whatever that area was known as before, whether it was not,
it was known as Dan.
It was Dan.
Dan before.
So the Dan area, maybe you're right. Like, maybe it wasn't
like a
weapon.
Testing.
Yeah, but it wasn't meant. People were not supposed to be there.
Right. Or like, what? Think
and
about
they
like
just happened to be there.
Think about like nuclear testing, where
yeah.
they do that, you know. And it's like, hey, people aren't supposed to be there.
And then,
they're doing this testing, and then you are over there, and now you're all messed up.
Yeah, because it is known that hikers have walked into territories. You know, they've walked into other countries
yeah.
they weren't
that's
supposed
what,
to be in.
That's what you do when you're hiking. You go places that are like unknown.
Not when I go hiking.
No, not when you go hiking.
No.
When you go hiking, you walk outside of the door, turn to the right, and then turn back to the left and
yes.
go back.
I only go hiking where old people go because I know they're
right.
not going anywhere.
No,
crazy.
You only go hiking where somebody's pushing a stroller and
yes.
there's a newborn baby walking right behind.
Wow, these Hollywood moms are a lot more ambitious. You can get lost with them.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's keep going. Sickening noises.
In December 2016, a CIA officer checked into the American Embassy's health office in Havana, suffering from nausea, headache, and dizziness. Days later, two more CIA officers reported similar ailments. By late 2018, the number grew to 26 Americans and 13 Canadians experiencing nausea, hearing loss, vertigo, nosebleeds, and focusing issues. In all the cases, victims claimed that the symptoms were triggered by a strange noise they heard at their homes or hotel rooms. One person said the noise was high-pitched. Another described a beam of sound pointed into their rooms. Some insisted that the noise more closely resembled marbles rolling along the floor. The illness confounded medical experts. Doctors at the University of Pennsylvania who examined some of the victims diagnosed concussion-like symptoms but found no signs they suffered concussions. Conspiracy theorists believe that the Cuban government was up to something. The Cubans vehemently deny they're responsible, and many American investigators believe them. That's because they still don't know who or what made the victims sick. Was it a new type of weapon? The CIA claims it doesn't know of any weaponry that could cause these symptoms. What about ultrasound? One theory holds that a pair of covert eavesdropping devices placed too close to each other by Cuban agents may have inadvertently produced such a reaction, like the kind of feedback you hear when someone stands too close to a microphone. But the FBI has found no evidence to substantiate that argument. In fact, ultrasound is above the range of human hearing. Recordings of the sounds from some of the victims only added to the confusion. Two scientists who studied the recordings believe they captured the sound of lovelorn male crickets. One of the scientists, Alexander Stubbs of University of California, Berkeley, says the insects are incredibly loud. You can hear them from inside a diesel truck going 40 miles an hour on the highway. Still, the scientists have no idea why the sounds might lead to illness in humans. Maybe it's just nerves. Cuba is a high-threat, high-stress post, a former embassy official told ProPublica.org. Diplomats are warned that there will be surveillance. There will be listening devices in your house, probably in your car. For some people, that puts them in a high-stress mentality, in a threat anticipation mode. True, but then how to explain what happened in China? In May 2018, an American posted in the consulate in Guangzhou was diagnosed with the very same mystery illness. Ultimately, 15 Americans were evacuated. While the seemingly airborne cause of these brain injuries is still a mystery, the fallout is clear. The Americans removed 60% of their diplomats from Cuba and expelled 15 Cuban diplomats from Washington, D.C. The mysterious sounds may well be the opening shots in a new kind of Cold War.
All right, so here we have a little bit of what we were talking about before.
Yeah.
A little bit of weapons, government testing, I mean, they got to test it out on somebody,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, and this is closer to our, you know, 2016, 2018.
These are the guys. I mean, if you're going to test it out, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess because, I mean, you know, for the government to say, all right, we're going to remove our diplomats from here and expel Cuba, they kind of stumbled on to like, okay, something's happening here, and we kind of know, but we know what we do to you. You know what we know what you're doing to us.
Right.
So we'll just get out of here.
It's like now we're equal. Okay, bye. Now we're equal.
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, the thing about like war and developing these weapons to basically take out an army of people.
Yeah.
Is just like with the atomic bomb and things like that. Like, there's just such serious repercussions, and people who not only die, but like get disfigured and permanently super injured, like their lives are ruined over it.
Yeah.
In the development of these weapons. Wasn't it when Einstein made the atomic bomb, or what he had said about it was that he regretted it? Like, it was the biggest regret he had.
I don't know if it was Einstein that made it. I think, did he? I don't think I, but the guy that did.
Yeah, the guy who made it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might have the person wrong, but I mean, that's what you're really trying to kill a large group of people. And
yeah.
So it makes sense that these kind of things are going to happen along the way. It kind of also reminds me of what happened in Puerto Rico and the Dominican Dominican Republic, where everybody was getting sick and all the Americans were over there. They were just dying. And they couldn't figure
They
couldn't figure out why.
Yeah, and they thought it was like tainted water, tainted liquor.
Yeah, yeah,
like that.
Yeah. But it was like, why is it only Americans then?
Yeah, it's...
I mean, don't we all drink water?
Is there some alien technology that's like, yes, we know how to recognize nationalities in someone.
Maybe, I don't know. I have no idea.
Or maybe, you know what? So
wait, that guy's an octopus!
This is how, if we really break down how science could possibly create a weapon that could detect that the person in front of them is American, is if science created a weapon that could kind of detect the minerals that are in a person's body based on the water they drink and say that's an American.
Or you could just, I mean, they do have that technology. It's like called an X-ray. They look at their heart and
if there's an American flag on it, he's American for sure.
He loves his country. If there's like clogged arteries, then they're like, oh, that's an American.
There you go. It's all, we have found 6 ways to define Americans with our new technology.
I'm sure. Like, get a peep at my arteries.
Man, mine was more like Magneto. Like,
all right, it's, you know,
I like, but okay,
yours was better. Okay, yours was better.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else you want to say? Your hair is better than mine.
I want to say that I did not say that Chinese province right, and I don't know how to say it.
Okay, all right, cool. So yeah, this to me is another one of the experimental weapons.
It's an unknown terror.
Mystery Girl.
I live in a small town in rural Australia. I'm a cyclist. I coordinate sports events, marathons, sell bikes, and gear. Around 6 a.m. this morning, I drove my bike up the mountain, and on the way, I passed a woman sitting by the side of the road. At first, I thought she could have been a hitchhiker, but there's no hotels around here and she had no bags. I stopped my car about 400 meters away from her, grabbed a bottle of water out of the car, and walked down to see what was going on. This is the moment I realized she was one of the most gorgeous women I have ever seen. She's probably about 20, pale, long wavy blonde hair to her hips, and one of those really German kind of hourglass figures. Really blue eyes, like this chick was crazy hot. Was wearing those long summer dresses that beach kids seem to love, which was freaking weird in the middle for the middle of the Australian bush. So I'm walking towards her like, oh my god, but I'm also thinking, what the? I hand her the bottle of water and ask if she's lost or needs a lift back to town. She just stares, doesn't take the water, no blinking. I think, wow, she's some kind of crazy. So I ask her if she ran away from somewhere, and she just said no and hadn't blinked yet. So I ask if she's waiting for someone to come pick her up. She said no again. I ask her where her house is. She said here. I'm halfway up a mountain. There's no houses around here. So it's kind of starting to get creeped out by this lady. I walked back to my Jeep, was going to drive back down the mountain and call the cops and get them to come sort this lady out. And she follows me. I was like, look, are you sure you don't want me to run you back to town? She just says no again. So I'm all, look, I don't feel comfortable leaving you here in the middle of nowhere. Please let me take you to a police station. She just turns around and walks off into the bush, miles from anywhere. And I'm just sitting there like, what just happened? Then I really started to get scared when the bug and bird noises started to come back. It made me realize that I hadn't heard a single other sound while I was talking with her. Like no magpies, no crickets, no early morning sounds at all. I hightailed it out of there and called the local coppers when I reached the bottom of the mountain. Basically, just said I saw a woman up the mountain who refused to get in my car. Then I realized how crazy that sounded and I hung up. What was it?
All right. Well, my guess would be ghost. I know, but like the fact that everything stopped, the bird stopped and all the crickets and things like that out there, that actually is more of a sign of like a evil energy, like a demon-y kind of thing. So by the fact that it was, you know, a beautiful woman, I would say ghost. But then by the fact that all those things felt the evil presence enough to be like, oh, we got to be quiet because something bad is here, something threatening, that leads me more towards demon. But then it's like, why didn't she didn't want anything from him?
Well,
she was just tired. She was a demon who was just tired.
No, I mean, maybe it's this. It's obviously it's a predatory presence. So you're right. It may be an entity. It may have been, you know, a cryptid in some way that hypnotized. Because what he saw was a gorgeous woman. There's no telling what it actually was.
Right.
And it was everything he loved. Like, I mean, he even said, and she was pale. Like, so he was into.
It
was everything he loved.
So it might have been geared towards him. And the way he said, like, she had an hourglass figure in a German way. That's
the
like
German kind of like.
What is that? Only you know what that means.
Yeah, like I didn't get most of this, you know. So it was one of the most gorgeous women I've ever seen.
Right. And then he describes the things that like you're kind of like, is that gorgeous? Yeah. I don't know.
She was even wearing a long summer dress that the beach kids seemed to love, which was weird, you know. Like, so that's what you love.
Okay. Yeah, so maybe it was something that looked different, but to him it was putting itself off like, hey, I'm this beautiful woman. You know, I got that hourglass German figure that I had to Google what it was to make.
And then, you know, if we go back to the idea of like, okay, so it's a predatory presence. Now, predators, you know, let's talk about animals who are mostly predators. They do kind of like stalk, have a moment. They kind of like get their energy together. So maybe this whatever this was kind of assessing the situation with what was in front of it. Like, oh, is this, I'm going to take this guy, but then like the Jeep threw her off, you know, or like, oh, I don't know. But, you know, it followed her like a predator.
Right.
Like, I'll follow you, but like, nah, never mind.
Or maybe she was waiting for somebody else.
Maybe.
Yeah, she was waiting for somebody else. She was actually stalking somebody else. And then she was like, oh, man. That guy's here now. I got to change into something.
No.
What is he like? Oh, okay. He likes this thing. And then he's sitting there talking to it, and all the animals are looking behind him, like, "Whoa, look at him! He's talking to that devil demon
thing."
The
devil demon thing.
It's like got blood rushing all down her face. She's like, "No, it's okay. I live here." And they're like, "Why isn't he scared?" And he's like, "Man, she's beautiful."
Yeah.
And she has boogers all over her nose.
Yeah, just a big old booger bubble coming out.
Yeah.
sleeping sickness.
From 1917 to 1928, 500,000 people were afflicted with a ghastly condition that could be part of the plotline of a horror film. The victims, very much alive and conscious, found themselves in inexplicably frozen states, their static bodies prisons for their minds. Encephalitis lethargica, aka the sleeping sickness, first appeared in Europe. It quickly spread around the world, reaching epidemic levels in North America, Europe, and India by 1919. About a third of those stricken with the illness died. Of the survivors, nearly half eventually found themselves unable to physically interact with the world around them, all the while fully aware of their surroundings. Though occasionally capable of limited speech, eye motion, and even laughter, they generally appeared as living statues, totally motionless for hours, days, weeks, or years. The cause is unknown, but one theory is brain inflammation triggered by a rare strain of Streptococcus, the bacteria responsible for many sore throats each year. Science's best guess is that the bacteria mutated, provoking the immune system to attack the brain, leaving the victim helpless. None of this explains why the illness disappeared, only to resurface sporadically, be it in Europe in the 1950s or in China 10 years ago when a 12-year-old girl was hospitalized for 5 weeks with the disease. Are such occurrences the new normal, or are they signs that EL could be planning something bigger any day? A 2004 analysis of 20 patients with symptoms remarkably similar to the EL concluded that whatever ailed them is still prevalent. As such, history's so-called sleeping sickness remains the stuff of nightmares.
That is actually one of the scariest things could imagine happening, is that you either lose your mind or that you can't, you're stuck in your own body, which I guess is kind of losing your mind as well.
Yeah.
When you completely lose your mind, you are stuck. You're a prisoner of your own body,
yeah,
of your own mind. And so in that way, it's very similar to this. And I think that kind of stuff is actually the scariest stuff of all, because it's something that actually can be proven happens to people, and there's really nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a friend a few years ago who was in the hospital for like months. He didn't tell anybody. And it was because of kept getting diagnosed as an ear infection. And finally he just beat it, whatever, and it paralyzed him. And all the doctors are like, we have no idea what it was. We're glad you fought it. He had to go through physical therapy to kind of learn to walk again. He kept it very quiet, but they just did not know what happened. They couldn't tell.
Right. I mean, doctors are just people, and we're actually not that far advanced given how, you know, long we've been humans.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't been on the planet that long. So everything basically is new. All the discoveries, everything. There's so many things that we still don't know about. Like I had a friend who just started getting headaches one day, and then they never went away for the rest of his life. He just always had headaches.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they tried, I mean, everything, and it was just no one could explain why.
Yeah, yeah, the human body is such a crazy mystery.
And then, you know, it could be, like, solved by something like, oh, you know, burn an orange and eat it. It's just like one of those things like, oh, that's all I needed to do.
The Jamaican cure?
Yeah, that's all I needed to do this entire time, you know, because we just don't know. We don't fully understand the world around us yet.
You got to go to Australia and talk to the German hourglass woman.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's stuff like that where people have, like, huge illnesses, and then they'll be like, oh, yeah, and then I just started taking rosewort, and then I got better. And it's like,
yeah.
And you were on all these medications before, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, since our diets have changed, then we're obviously not getting the same nutrients that we used to, so.
Yeah, we have that American enlarged American heart that we love our country with.
Here.
Sandy the Warlock, written by J.D. Half.
At the age of 14, Sandy Charles of Saskatoon, Canada, had become obsessed with horror movies. In fact, he watched Warlock, a 1989 film about the son of Satan traveling to the 1980s to destroy the world at least 10 times. The Warlock series described Gothic Satanist rituals and concepts, including the belief that if a person drinks the liquefied fat of an unbaptized child, they would gain special powers. Although the rituals in the movies are based on hoaxes about Gothic Satanism, Sandy wanted the power to fly. July 8, 1995, Sandy and an 8-year-old accomplice had set out to find the victim they needed to gain these powers. They waited at a playground and finally convinced a 7-year-old boy to follow them into the woods. After stabbing and smothering the victim, Sandy carved out 15 strips of flesh and fat from the victim's body. He took the body parts home, cooked them, and ate them. When he was arrested, the police found some of the flesh boiling on Sandy's stove at home. At his trial in 1996, in June, a psychiatrist testified that the accused did not see the victim as human, but as an object whose death was necessary to fulfill his deluded plan. Sandy was suffering from bizarre delusions and becoming schizophrenic. He had been contemplating suicide, but a voice told him that it might be just as good to kill someone else. He told police, "There's a spirit in my room that gave me these thoughts." On August 2, 1996, he was found not guilty by reason of insanity. The judge concluded that Sandy Charles was suffering from a mental disorder so as to be exempt of criminal responsibility. It was also concluded that there was no organized satanic group involved in this murder. Sandy was driven by his own delusions, mental illness, and inspired by a horror movie.
All right, so here we have again the, like we've talked about in this episode a lot, we have the prison of the body. You know, the,
yeah, that, mental that, illness is a, yeah.
That, the, to me, that, like I said, is one of the scariest things. I mean, I know we joke on here and have fun. We'll say, we'll make fun of ourselves or whatever. But actually, you know, these things are pretty serious and just absolutely devastating. I can't imagine something scarier than, you know, slipping into this kind of...
the schizophrenia and stuff like that.
Yeah, that or unhealth, you know, being so, like, jokes aside, that is like the most scary thing. So I completely have like, I feel for it at some point, but I'll, at the second point of it, it's like, you can't go around doing that though.
Yeah.
But you know, here the judge at least, you know, saw that he had a problem. Yeah. But I mean, he wasn't the first one to do something like that. And he wasn't the last. A lot of people claim Satanism as a reason.
Ramirez. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I often think about what if how people, like, we hear our inner monologue. Some people don't have an inner monologue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But how we understand this is just my inner monologue. This is not, you know, this is not a voice talking to me. Whereas some people might be like, that's a voice talking to me. You know?
I won't claim to know anything about how schizophrenia works. I'm really, really, really out of my element to talk about it. But I can imagine that I know that it does start off with you being like less symptoms and then they get worse and worse, from what I understand.
Yeah, it's a deterioration.
So then, yeah, that seems to me like the most scary part of all.
Yes, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it is. It's an unknown terror.
Only a Matter of Time, written by Carl B., 1961.
Being a cop in a small town in Minnesota probably isn't the most exciting career there is, but it's not bad either. It's actually a relatively peaceful and safe line of work compared to being in law enforcement in one of the big cities, New York or LA, for instance, where the action is. There's only around 10,000 people in the town where I live. It's way out in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by miles of open farmland. The only real crime that ever occurs is pretty minor stuff. The occasional rowdy rednecks getting to a fistfight at one of the three bars downtown, teenage vandals, petty theft, the odd drunk driver, a case of disorderly conduct here and there, the rare breaking and entering, that sort of thing. The only really serious stuff I've ever had to deal with is a couple of cases of domestic violence and assault and battery. But even that's pretty typical, I guess, and it doesn't happen very often. Well, it's not entirely true. There is one case that still haunts me, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Like I was saying, I live in a pretty peaceful little town. Boring, some would even say. The kind of rural, out-of-the-way hick farming community you've probably driven through on the highway yourself on the way to some place more interesting without as much as a second thought or glance back. The kind of place where nothing out of the ordinary ever happens, you've probably thought. And for the most part, you'd be right. But there's one case I can't get out of my mind. One case that still makes my blood run cold whenever I think about it. One case I can't explain, no matter how much I try to rationalize it to myself. What happened to the old Garrity woman 7 years ago? I'd been a police officer for 5 years when it happened, in the early spring of 14. There were only 5 cops on the entire town of the police force. Me, my partner, Jerry, Pete, and Vance, who both worked the night patrol, and the police chief. Plus Karen, an older woman who was a retired librarian and worked part-time as a dispatcher. The police department was located in the town municipal building and consisted of 2 offices, one for the chief and one for the rest of us to share. There are 3 jail cells in the rear, and 3 of them were never all occupied at the same time. It was an overcast, rainy afternoon in late March, early April. Jerry and I were in our cruiser on a routine patrol around town when Karen's voice came over the radio. There's a possible 1082 in progress at the Garrity House on Turner Road. For those of you who aren't in the know, a 1082 is police code for burglary. We acknowledged, then changed directions, heading for the Garrity home. I was unduly concerned about the call. I already had a pretty good idea who had made it. Eileen Garrity was an elderly widow who lived in a run-down farmhouse on the outskirts of town. She was probably around 65 or 70 years old, and had lived alone since her husband had died of a stroke 3 years before. They had 2 adult children, but they both lived out of town and never visited her. Since her husband's death, she had developed something of a reputation for being eccentric, to put it nicely, or crazy, to put it not so nicely. She was a shut-in who rarely left her home and had her groceries delivered once a week. Basically, a crazy cat lady minus the cats. The reason she was considered crazy was because she had become pretty flaky and paranoid since being widowed. She had called the police department on multiple occasions for everything from hearing intruders moving around in her attic to seeing UFOs in her cornfield. There were probably at least a dozen others, too. All her calls turned out to be false alarms, of course. The burglars she claimed were hiding in her attic turned out to be a pair of raccoons that had slipped in under the roof. The UFOs were probably just jets flying overhead from the National Guard base 50 miles west. Me and Jerry and Pete and Vance had all visited her before during our respective shifts. We never got frustrated with her or gave her a hard time about it. We usually indulged her, inspecting her house and property to calm her nerves. She'd relax, thank us, we'd leave, and the process would repeat itself in a couple of weeks or a couple of months. Honestly, our infrequent trips to her house were probably the only real highlight of what was a rather dull and unexciting job. We told the chief about Miss Garrity's latest emergency. Bigfoot was sneaking around her yard, and there was a giant anaconda lurking in the basement. He would just shake his head sadly. When Vance and Pete were the ones who had to deal with her, they'd tell us all about her most recent ordeal when me and Jerry saw them at the end of the shifts and the start of ours. They'd usually smirk in a mean-spirited way. Pete would twirl his finger next to his temple before they left. Jerry and I just felt sorry for the old woman. It couldn't have been easy for her, a frail, nervous, lonely woman living all alone in that old crumbling house with no friends or close family. I suspected she might be getting senile, or maybe entering the early stages of Alzheimer's or dementia. We worried about her living there by herself, almost a mile from the nearest neighbor. If her health suddenly turned bad, or she had an accident and couldn't call for help, well, there wasn't really much we could do about it. A couple of times I looked at the numbers of her daughter and son and tried calling them about possibly placing her in an assisted living home or a mental health facility. But the one time I managed to reach her son, as I was explaining his mother's situation to him, he interrupted me, telling me he was too busy at the moment and would call me back, then abruptly ended the call. He never did call me back. From then on, they always happened to be unavailable and never answered any of the voicemail messages I left them. So Jerry and me turned on Turner Road and drove up to Mrs. Garrity's house on the gray, rainy, early spring day, certain that the old woman was just overreacting yet again to something relatively minor, and her imagination was playing tricks on her. She was waiting for us outside on her porch when we pulled to a stop. I'll never forget how she looked. It shocked me. She'd always been thin, frail woman, but the other times we had been out there, but we hadn't seen her in probably a couple of months since her last false emergency. She had changed drastically since then. Now she was gaunt, almost emaciated, her cheeks hollow and dark rings around her bloodshot, sunken eyes. Her gray hair was tangled and didn't look like it had been washed in days, maybe weeks. The dress she was wearing was wrinkled and dirty. Her physical appearance was alarming enough, but there's also something about the way she was staring at both of us with those dark, dull eyes that seemed to look at us, through us, and past us all at once. It reminded me of old photos I had seen of American soldiers in Vietnam. The blank, expressionless,
shell-shocked look of someone who had been through more horror than any ordinary person should have to endure. Jerry and I exchanged a shocked look and got out and approached the old woman. Jerry asked her amiably what seems to be the trouble, trying to keep his voice nonchalant. She told us in a flat, toneless voice, "There's something in my house." She was shaking slightly, a woman on the verge of total physical and mental exhaustion. The way she phrased it, not someone, but something, made me raise my eyebrow. I told her, trying not to sound too patronizing, "Well, you just wait here and we'll go have a look and make sure it's safe." I looked to Jerry and nodded. We drew our pistols and stepped past Mrs. Garrity, cautiously entering the house. We did a routine sweep of the first floor, guns leveled, then headed upstairs. It only took about 5 minutes to check out the house. We had done it so many times before, we had the layout down pat. There were no signs of any intruders or evidence of breaking and entering, but I saw plenty of other things that disturbed me deeply. For one thing, the place was a total mess. The house was already pretty decrepit, but Mrs. Garrity had still taken pride at how clean she kept it, and it had always been spick and span on our earlier visits. Now, dirty dishes were stacked high in the kitchen sink, the counters were dirty, and trash and dirty laundry littered the floors. I also noticed that Mrs. Garrity's pillows and blankets were lying rumpled on the couch in the living room. The surface of the coffee table in front of it was cluttered with half-drunk cups of coffee, open containers of food, a Bible, and a rosary. It looked like she had been eating and sleeping in the living room for some time. When we went upstairs, sure enough, the bed in Mrs. Garrity's room was bare, and the room itself looked like it had been vacant for quite a while. There's also something in the living room that really alarmed me. Leaning in one corner was an old double-barreled shotgun that had probably belonged to her late husband. Jerry picked it up, broke it open, and found two spent shells in the chamber. He took one out, sniffed it, and told me the gun had been fired very recently. We also discovered something else bizarre. All the mirrors in Mrs. Garrity's house had been shattered, and every closet door had been boarded shut. The one in the front hall on the first floor had a huge hole blasted in the center of it, smaller holes pitting the splintered wood around it. You didn't need to be Sherlock Holmes to deduce that Mrs. Garrity had fired her husband's shotgun into that door. But why? What had happened here? Jerry shot me a perplexed, questioning look. I shrugged, clueless and equally baffled. Finished with our inspection of the house, we put away our pistols and turned around to go back outside. Mrs. Garrity was standing in the room behind us, staring at us with that unnerving blank expression. Both of us almost jumped a foot in the air, startled. Neither of us have heard her enter. Jerry regained his composure and flashed a fake, reassuring smile. "We don't see any sign of him, Mrs. Garrity. He must have slipped out the back. You're safe now." She didn't relax or appear relieved like she had the countless other times we had humored her. Her face seemed to twitch, and some new look dawned in her eyes. It took me a moment to identify it. It was a look of pure, hopeless doom mixed with utter terror. She said in that same odd, listless, flat voice, "No, I'm not safe. It's still here. It's hiding. That's why you couldn't find it. And after you leave, it'll come back for me."
All right. So I've actually heard a lot of police say that they have people like this called frequent flyers. That's what they call them.
Yeah.
Because they you know, call 911 all the time. They have problems like this, which could be real paranormal problems, or it could just be mental illness.
Yeah.
But it's very nice of him to help her out and be so kind about it like that. The second thing is, this guy spent half the story trashing his own city.
Nah, it's not that great. Nothing happens
like,
here.
The first like 12 paragraphs are, "I hate you. Yeah, it's not as good as New York or LA. I mean, no one would ever come here." I mean,
yeah.
Like, dang, okay, move.
You probably passed it, didn't like it.
Yeah, he was like really like, and he didn't even tell us what it was, what city it was, so we could like.
So we can know.
Yeah, it's almost like, "Oh, what do you look like? Oh, I'm not going to show you. You wouldn't like me anyway."
Yeah, it's very much the Beast. Right. "Don't go into the West Wing."
Oh, yeah. The Beast, from Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
So that was nice of them to go over there. The fact that she's getting worse and worse and she's seeing something is in her house, I mean, this is consistent. I would call the home on myself if I was her. I would call the Shady Oaks. I'd be like, "Hello, this is Shady Oaks." I'd be like, "Come pick me up. I'm old."
Well,
I'm old and I need to leave.
You know, that's the thing, is that not everybody knows that they need help. But
obviously she does know that she needs help. She called the police.
She calls the police. Yeah. And, you know, like the shooting of the mirrors and things like that, to me, I wonder if there's a a form of like dementia where you don't recognize yourself. You think right. you're a stranger and right. you shoot the mirror.
And she's looking not good,
yeah.
according to the officer. So maybe she's kind of scaring herself. But also with the shooting of the mirrors, you and I both know that mirrors are portals.
Yes.
And they are a way for entities and paranormals.
Yes.
Yeah, to all travel. That's why you shouldn't have mirrors facing each other, because it like is a gateway.
Yeah.
But all mirrors are gateways.
I'm scared now.
That's why they freak you out so much. Have you ever noticed how you're freaked out of mirrors?
Yeah.
Everyone is, because you get that bad feeling around them because they are a gateway.
I freak out with reflections of me in my own car window.
Okay, well, that might be a different problem.
So there's a part two to this.
Oh, okay. Part two to this. Let's get to it. All right, before we get to part two, don't forget to join us on the Facebook group and submit us your true scary story at facebook.com/truescarystorieswithedie. You can also find us on Instagram and on our website, both at True Scary Stories with Edie. And if you want, you can submit your story there. Besides that, please give us 5 stars after this. Nick works very, very hard, and he's just the greatest.
Yes, I read a lot of unknown terror stories.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. And he's very handsome. So give him 5 stars. Come on. Actually, give him 6 stars.
Oh. Because
he's quite the looker. Beautiful, beautiful man over here.
Yeah.
And then besides that, you got any shows coming up?
I will be in Corpus Christi this Friday and Saturday. I have Ventura Harbor coming up, I think, in May, the first week. And then if you've missed me in San Antonio and Houston, well, guess what? I'm doing a run where I'm going to Houston, Laredo, Austin, and San Antonio May 13th through the 16th.
Wow, that's almost my birthday.
Yep.
Oh, you didn't think about that, huh?
No, I did.
Okay, good. All right, so let's get...
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it's like the day before my birthday. Now that's an unknown terror.
Yeah.
You not remembering my birthday. All right, let's get to part two.
Mrs. Garrity started to cry with total despair, breaking down into hysterical sobs that racked her whole body. Jerry and me looked at each other, concerned. We went to the old woman and comforted her as best as we could, guiding her over to her couch, sitting her down with us on either side of her, coaxing her gently back to a state of calm. After she had herself back under control, we asked her to explain what had happened. She was quiet for a few moments, gathering her thoughts, then she began to speak. As we listened to her story, my body temperature seemed to gradually drop. I felt a chill envelop me. Several times I made eye contact with Jerry. His expression was a mirror of my own, disbelief and fear. She began. It started about a month ago. That's when I first heard the scratching at my closet door. A soft, slow, steady scratching that seemed to come from inside her bedroom closet at night. At first she had assumed it was probably a mouse or some other small animal. Except the scratching seemed to come from too high up to be the work of a mouse. Whenever she opened the closet door, always after the scratching had ceased, there had been nothing there. Several times she had started to open the closet door while the scratching was in progress to get to the bottom of it once and for all. But each time she had grasped the knob, she had been overwhelmed with a sudden, irrational sense of unease and had been unable to do it. The scratching sound too deliberate, too gentle, too deceptively harmless, as if something was trying to lure her into opening the closet door. To be safe, she had started locking her closet door at night. Over the next several nights, the scratching had gotten louder and more urgent, as if something was trying to tunnel its way through the wood. One day, she opened her closet door and found claw marks on the other side, claw marks that were 6 feet off the ground, claw marks that looked like they had been made by fingernails. The horror had really started for Mrs. Garrity about a week after she had heard the first scratching sounds. One night, she had awoken to a voice softly calling for her, a voice that seemed to be coming from the locked closet door. She was bewildered, even more so because she recognized that voice. It belonged to Bill, her dead husband. Bill's voice had pleaded for her to open the closet door, telling her that God had sent him down to take her up to heaven where they could be together again, and young, like they had used to be. Forever. At this point, Jerry had looked at me wide-eyed from the other side of the couch. I prodded her gently. Then what happened? Mrs. Garrity said, I thought I was dreaming. I thought it had to be a dream. Poor Bill had been gone for 3 years. And since I was having a dream, I didn't see no harm in doing what he was asking me to do. I got out of bed, went to the closet. I reached for the lock, but Then I stopped. Something didn't seem right. It was Bill's voice, and it seemed perfectly normal, but somehow it was wrong, too. The way he was talking to me, it wasn't like how Bill used to talk. It was like a stranger was using Bill's voice, trying to trick me into opening that closet door. That doesn't make much sense, does it? Actually, nothing she was telling us made sense, but we just asked her to continue telling her story. Bill, or whoever, or whatever was using his voice, had continued to beg her to unlock the closet. When she had refused, the voice had changed, becoming harsh and belligerent. It had angrily demanded she open the door. When she had still refused, it had begun to shout at her, using profanity and making obscene threats. Things Bill never would have said to me while he was alive, before beginning to pound violently on the door. The voice had begun to change, no longer sounding like her late husband's. It had become deeper and distorted until it didn't sound human. In terror, she had fled her bedroom and spent the night on the couch downstairs. Eventually, the pounding and the threats had stopped. Jerry politely interrupted her at this point. Mrs. Garrity, why didn't you call us at the police station when this happened? She was silent for a moment, then a small, bitter smile formed on her lips. She told us, I thought you'd think I was just imagining it. I know people in town think I'm a crazy old lady, and I've had you out here so many times before for things that turned out to be nothing. I just thought maybe it was all in my head. I didn't want to bother you about it. Things had escalated pretty quickly from there. The pounding and the threats had continued every night. She had been too scared to sleep in her bedroom and had started sleeping on the living room couch. Then one night, the pounding had begun, not just on her bedroom closet door, but all the closet doors in the house, all at the same time. She told us, like there were people in all of them trying to get out all at once, but it was the same voice in every closet, that same horrible voice. In fear, she had nailed all the closet doors shut to keep the thing, whatever it was, from coming to get her. Then about 2 weeks ago, something even more terrifying had happened. She had been in her bathroom and was washing her hands in the sink. When she looked up into the medicine cabinet mirror, here she paused. Jerry asked her, what did you see? She said in a choked whimper, I saw it. I saw its face instead of my own. It was wearing a black robe with a hood, and its face was a greening skull, a skull with horns. Its eyes were red, the eyes of the devil himself. I don't mean I saw it standing behind me in the mirror. It was in the mirror itself. I felt a shiver crawl up my spine. It reached out of the mirror. It didn't have hands, it had claws, and it tried to grab me. In horror, she had thrown a bottle of lotion at the mirror, shattering the glass. To be safe, had done the same to all other mirrors in the house. I asked her, how could you stay in this house with all that happening to you? She shrugged sadly. I don't have anywhere else to go, and no one will take me in. The nights were awful, but it was always better during the days. At least then I could get some sleep. It always stopped by morning and never happened during the day. She suddenly shuddered. Until 3 days ago. Then it started happening all the time, day and night. I wasn't safe no matter what time it was. It all came to a head late this morning. The pounding had gradually gotten more violent and forceful until all the closet doors were rattling in their frames. Mrs. Garrity knew that even with the boards nailed over them, it was only a matter of time until that thing broke through. In desperation, she had begun praying and reading from her Bible, which only caused the entity in the closet to laugh at her mockingly. Finally, she had gotten out Bill's shotgun and fired it through the closet doors. She told us, for a minute or so, there wasn't a sound. I started to think it was finally over. Then, I saw those red eyes burning in the dark. In the hole the shotgun had made, it chuckled and it said one word to me. I asked her, what word did it say? She said, tonight, and began to tremble. She lowered her head into her hands and began to sob again. Jerry and I were silent for some time, trying to absorb what she had just told us. We looked at each other, deeply troubled by her story. Neither of us actually believed it, of course, but it was obvious the poor woman was deeply disturbed. She was having some kind of nervous breakdown. Maybe her frayed grip on reality had finally snapped her, or maybe old age was taking its toll on her mind. One thing was clear. It wasn't safe for her to be alone anymore, especially not here. It was not healthy for her. Hell, for all we know, maybe her paranoid delusions were the result of some dangerous type of mold that had formed in the house. Jerry and I excused ourselves for a moment and stepped outside to talk in private. We both agreed she needed help. She needed to be institutionalized. But for now, it was best she stay somewhere else. We went back in and told Mrs. Garrity she's coming with us now. She's going to spend the night in a motel room in the town. And tomorrow, Jerry added, we're going to find a priest who would come and exorcise that evil spirit that had been bothering her, getting rid of it for once and for all. She broke down again, this time crying in relief and hugged me and my partner,
thanking us over and over again. We drove her to a cheap motel in town and checked her in. Her mental state already seemed to have improved in that short amount of time being away from the house. She smiled and told us she couldn't wait to finally get a night of decent sleep without having to worry about that thing banging on the doors. I think mostly she was just glad she wouldn't have to be afraid anymore of the entity she was convinced was lurking in her house. We both smiled at her and said goodbye, getting in the cruiser and driving away. Our smiles faded as soon as we pulled away from the motel. We drove in grim silence. We both liked old Mrs. Garrity in spite of all the time she had made a nuisance of herself to the police department with her bogus calls and her erratic behavior. We were sorry her mental state had deteriorated to such a point that she could no longer look after herself. We told the chief her story when we got back. He sighed sadly and nodded, agreeing that she had to be committed somewhere. Tomorrow, him and I were going to drive out and personally visit her son and daughter and explain to them what was going on. If they still refused to do what needed to be done, the chief would see to it himself that Mrs. Garrity got the help she needed. But we never got the chance. The last time we ever saw Mrs. Garrity was when Jerry and I left her at the motel. Around 4 a.m. the next morning, I was awakened by an urgent phone call from the chief telling me to get over to the motel as soon as possible. He wouldn't say why over the phone, but I already had a hunch it had something to do with Mrs. Garrity. I felt an awful sense of dread as I got dressed. I wondered if maybe she had taken her own life in her motel room after we had left her. When I arrived outside the motel, my fears were confirmed when I saw a crime scene tape blocking the door to Mrs. Garrity's room. The chief, along with Jerry, Pete, and Vance, were gathered outside, plus a couple of cops from the state police and a pair of detectives from the city. The chief greeted me with a grave expression as I approached. He told me Mrs. Garrity was gone. At first, I thought he meant she was dead. Then, seeing the solemn look on my face, he clarified himself. She was literally gone. I looked at him confused. I saw something in his eyes I had never seen before, something that caused a ripple of fear in my heart. The chief was scared. He told me he didn't know what to make of it himself. People in the neighboring rooms had heard blood-curdling screams and sounds of violence coming from Mrs. Garrity's room at around 2 a.m., then nothing. They had called the police department. Pete and Vance had been the first to arrive. They had pounded on the door, but there had been no response. They had forced the door open. When they saw what was inside, they had called the chief himself. I asked him, what did they find? He told me, maybe you ought to come see for yourself, leading me to the doorway and under the crime scene tape. He explained to me that they found no sign of forced entry. The door and windows of the motel had all still been locked from the inside when Pete and Vance showed up. I took a look around, feeling blood cold as ice course through my veins. There was fresh blood splattered around the room, on the walls, the floor, bed, even the ceiling. The blood-stained bedsheets had been ripped away from the mattress, as if someone had desperately tried holding on to them as they were pulled out of bed. There were 10 very thin trails of blood on the carpet leading away from the bed. 10 thin trails of blood that had been made by 10 desperate, terrified fingers crawling for purchase as their owner was dragged away. I followed the bloody finger marks across the floor, away from the bed, to where they ended, at the closet. I looked at them, then I looked at Chief. He looked back at me, his face hard and impassive, but fear gleaming in his eyes. I approached the closet. The door was standing open. I stood there, looking in it for some time. The closet was empty, completely empty. There wasn't even blood on the floor. They never found Mrs. Garrity.
All right, and that's why he said tonight.
Yes.
Before the lotion throw. So it seems like she, this thing was kind of like looking for somebody to mess with.
Yeah.
It did the closet thing where it tried to lure her into opening and letting it in. Because we always talk about on this show that a lot of times these things need permission of some sort to mess with your life. So they might do something like that to persuade you into letting them get attached to you.
Yeah.
So when she thought it was a dream and she just was like, whoa, it's a dream. Why not? That's the moment I think that it all changed.
Yeah.
Because she said that, yes, okay, why not? And then that was when it gave the ultimate permission, like, okay, now you can get to me.
Yeah.
And then it could make itself appear. And like we said, like through the mirror where it's not like a reflection, it's like a door. It's like a doorway. Like she was saying, it wasn't like it was reflected. It was like it was right in front of me. Like how we were just talking about the doorways and the portals and stuff like that through mirrors. There was a lot of true scary stories. Good eggs in here. Like we had skeleton, which you know are terrifying to me.
Yeah.
From the last episode. You remember that now?
Yeah, about the skulls.
You forgot about it already?
You realize that you had a skeleton in you?
Yeah. That one. And then there was also, it was the devil himself. She said that, which is also another.
Did she? I don't think she said that.
Yeah, she did. She said red eyes like the devil himself.
Then
I was like, the devil himself. That's another one of our things.
Yes.
The devil himself. Yes. So there were a couple things that we actually have talked about so many times on this podcast. Yeah. Besides that, I think, that's when it got permission to kind of mess with her, take her places, actually touch her, you know, things like that. It upped its access to her when she decided she would just open the door. As far as where she went, anything like that, I mean, it's incredibly scary. I have obviously no clue, and neither do the law enforcement.
Yeah. I mean, she could have just ran out and ran off, and that was it. Like, just gone.
But it said that all the doors and windows were locked.
Well, just because, I mean, it's a hotel room. Uh-huh. You can leave, and it locks behind you.
Oh, okay.
You know? What I'm wondering is, okay, so the son and daughter don't want to do anything with their parents, basically.
Do they know?
Do they know that Bill, their father, Mrs. Garrity's husband, had made a deal with the demon that he shouldn't have made, and that it was coming after the family? But since it couldn't get to, like, the son and daughter, you know, or maybe Bill was evil. Maybe Bill was something different. You know?
Oh, no.
Like, Bill was, like, into witchcraft, or Bill was into black magic. Hey, there's people that are into voodoo. How do you know that Bill wasn't into voodoo?
Because there's never been a witch named Bill.
No, not that he was a witch. Oh, okay.
There's never been a sorcerer named Bill.
There was a witch named Harry.
Okay. I don't know. But I was thinking more along the lines of the kids didn't want to help because the mom has always been cursed.
Yeah.
And they grew up with her being cursed.
Yeah.
Her husband loved her, tried to help her, but she's cursed. And so they are like, I don't want to go back to that and have it come to me now. You know, like how sometimes these things follow families and children and grandchildren and stuff like that. So maybe she's always been like that and it's getting worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the kids are like, we can't help her because we don't want that thing to get us.
Yeah.
That, you know, has been following my mom all this time.
No, man.
Because, I mean, it's hard to believe that both of them just wouldn't care at all to just make the phone calls to get her put in a home.
I mean, it's not hard to believe. People are like that. That's a very real world thing, that families just disown their parents sometimes.
To me, it seems like they already knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And they were choosing, like, this is that way it has to be for it to be over.
No.
Yeah. It is a unsolved terror.
It's an unknown terror.
Oh, unknown terror. Thank you guys so much for listening to True Scary Stories with Edie. Don't forget to go to the Facebook group, the website, and our Instagram, all at True Scary Stories with Edie. And go give us 5 stars right now, okay? And we'll be posting in the Facebook group where Nick is going to be.
You were right. Unsolved terror.
Oh. Damn it. Where he's going to be doing stand-up. We love you guys. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Bye.